Who here today is doing office custom development? A couple of people. Macros? A few. VSTO? A few. Okay. SharePoint development? A few as well. Custom web parts? Custom workflows? Yeah. InfoPath? A few. Excel services and BI reporting? Okay. Well, hopefully today we can cover something for everyone here. We're really going to talk about the new app model. And, you know, we've been back and forth on what this thing is called, and eventually we decided just to call it apps, because that's essentially what it is. And this app model is a shared web model across Office, SharePoint, also Project, but it really is a standards-based, extensible model. So take you through kind of some of our thinking of why we came to this. So when we set out to design Office 2013 and this release of products, there are a couple of things that we looked at, you know, we had to think about as we went forward. The first thing was, you know, how is the market evolving? And what we've seen is that, you know, Office is a phenomenal business tool. We have about 1 billion users around the world today, all using Office in their day-to-day work. So we know that Office is a pervasive and important business tool. We also know that there are a lot of SharePoint developers and businesses have got a ton of value out of customizing SharePoint, making it meet their own needs as well. Then when we look at today's trends, you know, we see HTML5 and CSS3 really evolving, and those standards being quite robust now to do really interesting things that previously you could only really do in a native kind of bare metal C# or C app and those sorts of things. We know, you know, the new generation of developers are generally HTML5 developers. That's where they start. You know, I remember when I was at school, HTML wasn't really a software engineering topic, right? It was something that you kind of did on the side. They teach that in business class. But right now, you know, people are building rich, compelling apps on top of HTML5. And when we look at web APIs, we're finding that more and more organizations are opening up some of their data feeds to web APIs as well, so that you can tap into that data, mash up that data, and get, you know, really interesting insights out of that data as well. Anyone familiar with the Azure data service, the Dallas? Is it called Dallas?
Not sure.
Yeah. Essentially, it's an Azure trading platform where you can buy and sell data. So there's organizations now that have a real compelling advantage of collecting, perhaps it's real estate trading data and those sorts of things. And now there's actually a programmatic auction place to find and sell that sort of information. So we see this web API and this data being a really growing area as well. And so the principles when we started to develop this new app model, this new extensibility model for Office, were a couple of things. Firstly, we really wanted to be designed for the cloud. Whether you're using the cloud or not, whether it's the public cloud in Office 365, a private cloud, a hosted cloud, wherever, whatever cloudy cloud you've got, we wanted to make sure that it would work across all of those scenarios. And that's not something that we could say with VBA. I mean, show of hands, who has users that request almost every day macros running in the web apps or something like that, or the VSTO apps to be able to run in these new platforms as well. But VBA was written at a very different time, very different technology. You know, it's not even .NET. You know, it predates .NET. It's, you know, a fantastic tool for automating Office, but it really doesn't expand to the sort of platforms that we want Office to expand to. As you get into the web, as you get into mobile devices, tablet form factors, and even Windows 8 as well, macros may not be the best solution going forward to invest all your time in. And again, it's a specific skill. When you could tap into standards-based skills, rather than having to use the VBA editor, if you can use some sort of more compelling tool that you're familiar with, whether that's Visual Studio, whether that's new tools we'll show you today, or whether that's Eclipse or Notepad or whatever it is, you can choose what to develop with these standards-based APIs and then integrate into Office and SharePoint. So what we'll cover today, we'll show you a bit about the new apps, we'll show you some of the tool sets that we'll provide you, and we'll also talk about the life cycle of how you can publish, acquire, and manage these apps as well. So, a couple of things. You know, what do we say when we mean apps for Office and SharePoint? You know, these are creation and consumption applications. Really, that's, you know, that's pretty much all they do. They get data from your documents or from your sites, or they push data from your documents and sites. And that's essentially the interaction that you have there. Fairly simple, if you want to think of it, if you're a SharePoint developer, if you kind of recall back to SharePoint 2007, you have connected web parts. In many ways, it's a very similar way to that. It's a frame into your documents and your data into the Office user interface, and then tapping in to connecting that with data to share data back and forth between your custom app and the Office document itself. But it does provide us with new scenarios. It means that we can start to tap into cloud services, means we can tap into data sources. Previously it was a lot harder to do that in VBA. And it also allows us to have new user experiences as well. Essentially now, end users that don't need to be developers can take these components, reassemble these components, and essentially build their own mashups in this scenario as well. So that's enough slides for now. I want to jump over and show you a demo of a pretty compelling app. Okay. This is Excel. This is Excel 2013. Minimize the ribbon, showing some of those sorts of things as well. But what I have here is a couple of extra pieces, which are essentially what we call an app for Office. On the left-hand side, you can see a task pane there, the metal tracker. That is an app for Office. Then you have over here what we call a context app. So it's embedded within the document. And those are apps for Office as well. And you can think of them, at its most simplest, as kind of like an iframe. We're framing in this other application into the Office user experience. And then we have JavaScript that allows that app to tap into the Office JavaScript and control and set some of that data there. So as I move around this sample, for instance, I can click in, I can look at the data feeds I'm getting, and I'm pulling back data here from the Associated Press. I click over, I can see kind of a roll-up of how the Olympics has been going here. I can see the recent or the last events. I can click around, and I can see information on a particular team as well. And so you can see that these apps are actually interacting with the Office document itself. So as I go through here, changes it. It's loading back that data in the left-hand app, and it's also reformatting my app here, which is essentially just a scatter app as well. So we've just got, it's a little bit of a fun way to visualize it. We can do some things with gravity there as well. But essentially, it's just loading in that data and giving us a very different visualization of that same data as well. Likewise, if I go down here a bit lower, you can see this app as well. This is essentially a Bing Maps app. What we're doing here is we're framing in a Bing Maps app, and then we're laying over a load of data on top of it as well. So there's some seats at the front, guys, if you want to come in and sit. So essentially we're using the Bing Maps service, and then we're just overlaying our data from Excel on top of the Bing Maps service there. So very simple, very easy way to extend kind of visualization capabilities from just doing charts, just doing those sorts of things, and a really compelling and interactive system as well. The best news now is that I can publish this, and I can publish it to the Excel web app, so I can have that same level of integration, that same dashboard available just as a website. So let's move on and show you some different types of agaves as well. This is an app in Word, and this app is essentially a Bing news search. So what it's doing here is it's just looking through whatever I'm highlighting in this sort of environment here. So I can choose perhaps Sebastian Coe. And the app is just a very simple loading in that information, hitting Bing, and bringing back that sort of information as well. You click here, Stratford East London. So you can see the kind of interaction that we can have now with the document and those sorts of things. So examples of these sorts of documents, this is kind of an interesting one for research and those sorts of things. You could imagine an Encyclopedia Britannica or a Wikipedia lookup over here. But then in a business scenario, you can also imagine that this would be an interesting use to look up project names, purchase orders, team names, customer details, and those sorts of things. It essentially just embed that CRM information or that business information into the flow of the document. Now, this content here doesn't live in the document, so it's important to point that out. It's essentially just an iframe into that line of business system you're building as well. So you can share this document around. The content in this isn't embedded. You've got security controls of who can access that essentially there. It's really just putting the information where the user is so that they can see it and interact with that information as well. So to show you how to essentially add a mashup now, and I've got a pretty basic spreadsheet here. You know, it's a cost of living index per state. And what I'm going to do here now is I'm just going to extend this and state, you know, geographic information is just ripe to add in a map. So let's show you how you can add in a map. Firstly, you can see here in the insert menu we have this apps for office item as well. And this is how you insert apps for office. Essentially, choose an app. I've got a recently used app where I can click and see all the apps that I have available. And basically with one click, it'll load in this app as well. Let's move this around. So then I'm going to insert some data. So let's just grab this information here. This is a cost of living index for the United States. And what we're going to do now is we're going to map that information here on the map. And there you go. Oh. Preview. That's good. Yeah, there we go. Essentially here, I've overlaid on this map, essentially, you know, little dots, and the bigger they are, depending on the cost of living in that particular state as well. You know, it is still the Bing Map API, so I can do all the things that if I wanted to embed that in my own app, you know, bird's eye view, change the color here, and just repaint the app. So I can do all of that sort of thing within the map as well. So that's pretty simple. But say I want perhaps a different sort of app. And so I can go, and we have this concept of an app store in Office and SharePoint that we can go and look. If you look on the office.microsoft.com preview site, you can actually see this app store, and you can see some of the apps that we've already published. So what I'm really looking for here, though, is rather than just have a dot across those states, I want a heat map. So I'm going to search for a heat map. That's a heat map that's already been published. Works with Excel. Just clicking into that, I can essentially add that app to my collection of apps that I have access to as well. So just in one click there, use that app. I can see when it's released, it can be rated, and those sorts of things as well. So just clicking add there, essentially what that's doing, that's just adding that app to my Office account. And so this notion in Office 2013 is Office as a service. Means that we can have these sorts of interactions. We can know which sort of apps will go with your user. So if you're familiar with using particular apps and you're using them at home or using them at work or you're moving from your desktop to your laptop, those settings can roam with you across those. And this app store is one example of that. So now if I jump back to Excel, let's just make some room here. So I can insert another sort of app. So let's see all apps here. And you can notice this gets populated. This is essentially the app selector menu here. And there's a number of things. You can see here, I've got my apps, the apps that I've chosen to add to my collection. I've also got organization apps. So we have this concept of an app catalog that an organization can manage on behalf of users. Just using a very simple SharePoint site, it's an app catalog template. You can then start to surface up these apps to people in your organization. You can even start to target apps by a departmental role or user segmentation or something like that. So if you have a whole lot of finance apps or a whole lot of sales apps or production apps or even IT support apps, you can customize the apps that people see in this menu as well and publish them out to them as well. But in this case, I'm just going to insert a geographic heat map. So we'll add in the map here. Going to hit the service. And basically then, I just need to set this. Set the map. select my information that I want the map to load in. Color theme, let's go red to green, give my map a title. And there we go, that's the cost of living map across the US. Oop, I messed that up, it should be the other way around, so I can very easily go back in there, change around the settings. And there you go, I have a cost of living app, very simple here. But perhaps, it's pretty cool. You can do these sorts of maps, you know, really easily with the app, add-ins, you add them to your documents. You know, and a user without writing any code, I can create much richer visualizations, I can publish them out to the web, and have users interact with them as well. But this is kind of live content here, so if I wanted to say that perhaps Washington State is a little bit more expensive, I can update that data, and what you'll see is the map refresh as we go here. Wasn't refreshing, but you can see, you know, it's a live data. Yeah, but you know, and really here, you know, you're only limited by your imagination of what you can build in this scenario and deliver within Excel. Then the users can play with it. So if you wanted to implement, if it was working today, you'd see that instant refresh happening as I adjusted the data there as well, similar to what you saw in the metal tracking app as well. There's some apps, you know, really about authoring as well, but this kind of notion of apps we can also apply to other sources as well. For example, Outlook. So let me show you an email. It's probably no surprise to you that preparing for a presentation like this, there's a lot of back and forth on email. And so this is an Outlook email that Jake's sent me. And you can see this gray bar up here in Outlook as well. And it has two items. It says LinkedIn and action items. And these are how Outlook apps get presented to the user. And the difference with apps for Outlook is that they're not really necessarily bound to data, but what they can do is they can look at regular expressions in the email itself to propose certain things. We do this out of the box with Exchange 2013 to show you action items. So one example here, this is saying, hey, I think there's a term or a phrase that I recognize. Let me know what time suits you. Do you want to follow up and put in a task here to action that item? So we're actually looking through, we're looking for actionable items here in Exchange to present this as an app. Also, we can extend that for a number of different ways as well. We can extend it to a LinkedIn app. If we've found certain contacts on this page, in this LinkedIn app, you can see that we're surfacing up, hey, you mentioned Jake and myself in this, what can I do here? So I can actually just interact with the service right here. I can even, for instance, I'm not connected to Jake, I can hit connect, and then instantly, we're connecting to LinkedIn and doing that in the email. So you can imagine here, you can build all sorts of scenarios around CRM apps, other apps, tracking apps. If you're, for instance, a postal service or delivery service and you have a tracking number, you can imagine you could surface up tracking information, live tracking information here. If you're sending automated alerts with budget notifications or something like that, rather than just sending out that email that you may get to perhaps 2 days later, the situation may have changed, you could send out an alert email here and then have an app here that's showing live data to show you where that information is at any point in time. So really it's a way to start to think in very different ways about how you use Outlook and how you use email to deliver information, but also how you keep the information in that email fresh, so that it's not just static information as well. So in the case of Outlook, we manage a lot of different apps in the Outlook experience as well, and this is all managed on the Exchange side. So administrators can set up Exchange, so essentially for Office and SharePoint, we're managing the apps in a SharePoint library or the Office Store. In the case of Outlook, the settings are managed in Exchange or the Office Store as well. So you can see here, I can set the apps I have available. Some apps can be enforced by IT administrators, some can be disabled, and each app essentially has a permissions or a contract. So if you use Windows Phone, very similar to when you download a new app and it's asking for certain permissions, it's asking to be able to use perhaps your location service, or it's asking to be able to use your contact list or it's asking to be able to use your data connection or something like that. Apps for Office are exactly the same way. There is a set permission that they have that they request when you install them. So as an administrator, you can know, for instance, that the suggested email, the suggested meetings app, the permissions are only to read items. It's not going to write back to any information. It's not going to send information anywhere else and those sorts of things as well. So we've thought long and hard about how we can put the right sort of security controls in this model as well. So that's apps. You know, pretty simple concept, and really we're just limited by the sorts of apps that you can create and the sorts of creativity you can get with the platform in that sort of regard. So when we're building apps, a couple of things to think about. The first is that they are web apps. You know, we're really embracing HTML5, JavaScript, CSS3 to be able to do these apps and deliver these very rich native-like experiences, even though they're essentially just web applications as well. They're hosted in the cloud. And when I say cloud in that context, I mean they're hosted not in Office, and not on your SharePoint server. So whatever your definition of cloud is, that's where you can host them. Whether that's an Azure service, whether that's an EC2 service, an App Engine service, a server under your desk, you know, a virtual machine somewhere else. Essentially, you know, think of it like an iframe that we're just framing that application into Office. So when we add an app into our app catalog, essentially what we do, we just have an XML manifest, and that XML manifest is telling us where to go to load that app and what we need to know about that app as well. And then the apps interact with Office and SharePoint via a standard API as well. So it's essentially a JavaScript API that you're including in this environment, and then that gives them the permissions based on the permissions they've asked for, read and write access to various parts of the Office applications themselves. So Jake, perhaps you can talk a little bit more about
how it
my lovely
works.
Architecture slide of how we plug this all together.
Awesome slide to be handed over to. But this is sort of the obligatory, this is how it all works. It really, I'm going to dive into what all this actually means. But what we've got is we've got HTML5 and JavaScript. We use OAuth and a whole heap of standards to actually interact with Office. Office now provides a JavaScript API that we interact with instead of the old com interop, that sort of stuff. And that's the most exciting part for me, because coming from VSDO, you're doing managed add-ins, they're not sandboxed, they're in process, full trust, and if anyone's installed iTunes onto their machine and then Outlook stops working, that's the sort of problem you get. And you've also seen it with SharePoint, where someone installs something and brings the entire server farm down, that sort of thing. The whole idea of this is you move it all out, all using standards-based HTML, JavaScript. I'm going to walk through a couple of scenarios today. The first one is around the mail apps, so the contextual agaves. Who submits time cards? Who's a contractor? Sort of, not too many. So one of the things we have to do as a Redify consultant, every day we have to submit our time cards, and I thought, that's something that we've already got a nice consultant portal that we log in, submit what we're doing. That's my example that I'm going through today. I'll show you a couple of other things as well. I don't like that guy. So one of the really nice things is it's all, who's a web developer? Who's done HTML, JavaScript? Quite a few of you, excellent. It's embracing all of these standards. We want to target all the platforms, so we want to run on mobile web apps, we want to use Outlook web access, we still want awesome support for these things in the rich client, but if you're using Outlook web access, I'm on the road a lot, I'm using my phone a lot, those sort of things, you just can't target these custom, your business apps to those platforms, it just doesn't work. Using this way, we've got all of these standards, we use familiar tools, I love Visual Studio, so I get to use Visual Studio on a day-to-day basis, building this stuff. We can use NuGet for packages, all these sort of things, and familiar platforms. So this isn't limited to .NET. I can build my agave in whatever I want. HTML, JavaScript, I could have a Node backend, I could use it in PHP, doesn't matter. The whole thing is it's using just the web. Right now, you can actually go to dev.office.com and go grab the, what you can do is sign up. And what will happen is you'll get a whole Office 365 instance provisioned for you. That gives you SharePoint in the cloud, Outlook Web Access, Exchange, all of the things you need to start getting started with this. I'll show you some of that now. Okay, so we'll start off with a SharePoint developer site. When you sign up, you get a developer site set up for you. The first thing I want to run you through is something called Napa. So who's actually heard of Napa? Not many. Awesome. You guys will be really... This thing is really cool. So this is Napa is actually a SharePoint app. You install it into your SharePoint dev instance, and this is an example of what a SharePoint app can do. It's a pretty insane one. Napa is basically development tools in the cloud in SharePoint. So I want to go hit a new project. You've got a couple of options. You've got an app for SharePoint. You've got task panes for Office. Alistair was showing you task panes. And you've also got the content app, which were sort of the big map controls. And then the final one is mail apps for Office. So this is your contextual add-in. You can see right here, you've got the different apps that these different Agaves can be targeted towards. So we'll start off, we'll do a task pane app. Give it a little project name, hit create. Wait, not long at all. We actually get an IDE in the cloud. You got all the coloring that you'd want. And the way, it's pretty simple. There's a few components to this. Up the top, you've got office.css. There are all your office styles. Office.js, that gives you your all the JavaScript object model. Right here, you got a couple of inputs, buttons, getting data, setting data, and then your script, your app sits in this script. You can host this anywhere you want. And then the manifest, which we can access just down here, the properties of your app, says what this start page is. At the moment, Napa just deploys straight into a SharePoint hosted app catalog, but that's only client-side, so it just serves up an HTML file, so it's still outside of SharePoint.
So this, yeah, it's a really low-risk, quick way to get started with building these sorts of apps. I think it's phenomenal work that we've done in partnership with Visual Studio to build out this full IDE, this Visual Studio-like experience, just running in the web. So, you know, you can do it. It's just web standards. You can do it on any device you want. You know, it doesn't require Windows 8. Doesn't require IE10. It's a standard experience you can access from anywhere.
Has anyone heard of Cloud 9? Similar sort of thing. This one works. So, we actually got right here. We've actually got IntelliSense as well. So I can go set timeout, and it actually gives me sort of like your templates that you get in Visual Studio. So I go set a timeout. I'll set it for a second. I'll then just go, okay, Office. So this is how you access the Office app model. When Alistair was saying, it's all standards. There's a similar API across the board. You go office.context, and that's your contextual information for the current app you're in. So if you're in Excel, you'll be able to have interactions with the Excel object model. If you're in Outlook, you'll be able to get at the mail item, so you can get at the body, the subject, who sent the email, who it was sent to, that sort of thing. So what we'll do is we'll go context.document. That gets me the Word document. I'll then say set selected data async. So this allows me to push data into an Excel spreadsheet. And then I'll just say delay set text. I'm just extending the default example. So the default example basically gives you a task pane app that can read and write data to Excel. Another thing that's quite interesting is the APIs are all asynchronous, so you'll see that as you start diving in. The point of my demos today is not so much to show you all of the object model, because there's a heap of really cool examples out there. You can download, start playing with this. All of the examples that Alistair showed, they're all up there. You can download the code for those, play with it. So what I've done is I've just gone down to the left-hand corner, hit run. Now what it's doing is deploying that into the SharePoint app catalog and installing it. Then, if all goes well, excellent. You can just go launch app. They'll say some data files can be harmful and all that sort of stuff that you will say yes to. Not really. Takes a little bit.
You're a developer. You develop this app. Of course it can be harmful.
Okay, so we just have to say enable editing so it actually can do the server interaction. So this is now pulling my app out of the SharePoint app catalog. Got my TaskPane 2 application loading up the page now. And then you've got your sample get data and set data. So I can go blah, get data, pulls it in. I can also just go set data, and then after a second, sets the delay text. It's all just JavaScript. There's nothing magic about it. It's a proper just JavaScript library that you consume, and you're not limited to what you can do. So that's the first thing I really wanted to show you. The next is, let's upgrade to Visual Studio. I want a bit richer experience. So under under apps, .NET 4.5, you just go apps for Office. You can also go apps for SharePoint. Let's go do demo 2, and I'll just call it app 1. Okay. Similar sort of experience than that you saw in Napa. It'll ask you what sort of application you'd like. I want to go mail app, contextual. I only want to apply it to emails. I don't want it to apply to appointments. At the moment, they're the two that you can extend. So this all doesn't replace the existing model, but it's a really flexible and has a huge amount of advantages. So there are still scenarios that this doesn't let you do everything you want to do. Then you go use the existing stuff, but there's all the limitations that come with all the existing models.
That's right. And we should be specific with that. Our VBA, macros, VSTO apps, all the extensibility options you have today are still supported in the new version. But this is essentially an additional tool, and a tool with a little bit more breadth in where you can use it as well. So we expect, you know, over time, this is really our focus of investment and extensibility going forward in the Office and SharePoint platform.
Okay, so you'll notice down the bottom, it's adding jQuery and a few different things from NuGet. My example that I was talking about before is my timesheet application. So there's a couple of things I really want to show you. The first one is this manifest that Al was talking about. You can specify your icon. I'm going to change this so it only takes 100 pixels. I don't need 250 pixels. Generally, what you want to do is basically figure out the minimum amount of height that your application needs. Don't introduce a scroll bar, things like that, just to make sure the user has a nice experience. That's a nice little GUI, but what we can do is go in and see the actual underlying manifest. What we want to do here is I don't want this Agave or app to activate all the time. I want it triggered by something very specific. So I'm going to go, I want to change the mode to and. So down here, you've got a collection of rules. Can everyone see that? I should bump the font size. Sorry. You've got a collection of rules. So you can rule, like a rule could also be another rule collection. So you can do all the ands and ors and as complex as you really want. The first one, if you just want to catch all, item is message. So that means every email you will activate on. So this a good example of that is LinkedIn. All emails have contacts in them. Mine here, I want to go rule. The type of it is a item has regular expressions match. What I want to do is I want to match the property name of subject. I want to say that the regex name, what the regex name is basically just a name for your regular expression, so you can access it via code if you want, so you don't have to redefine the same thing if you want to run the same regex in your JavaScript. So a little bit of context. Every day when we haven't submitted our timesheets, we get an email saying, you've got overdue timesheets.
Surely you don't wait until you get the email before you do your timesheets.
No, not at all. And it basically says, you have outstanding timesheets.
Outstanding.
So I'm not doing anything special with the regex. I'm just simply matching a string. But you can use full regular expressions if you wanted to. So what we can do here is I can just go, I want to be a little bit creative. My page here, this is your application. I want to be a little bit creative. I want to add a NuGet package, and I want to add knockout JS, if I could type properly. So knockout JS, if anyone's done XAML-based things, you've got data binding. Knockout.js lets you do data binding in JavaScript and HTML. It's very handy. Reason I'm going to use this is not to confuse you all, but just to show you that you can use whatever libraries that you feel familiar with and want to use in your day-to-day web development. So what I'll do is start off, and I'll go in here. We want to basically start off it pointing to remote app URL. This is the default. If you hit F5, it'll upload it into your Exchange profile and then allow you to start your app. So what we can do is hit F5 on this guy. I just have to jump across to here because I use LastPass. I need my password. We'll jump across to here, put my password in.
And so because this is a mail app, it's publishing to the Exchange server, so you do need to be an Exchange admin to publish apps to the server and promote it to your users. You know, for a dev scenario, you'll have a dev environment to do that, but once you finish devving, you'll actually package it up, give it to your IT administrator to load in, so you can have a nice, loosely coupled experience. It's very unlikely the Exchange admin is going to give the developer admin rights on the Exchange server. So we have a model in place to do that.
Yep. And this is one of the reasons why you go to dev.office.com, so you can get your own Office 365 environment provisioned that you are an administrator on, and you can do all this stuff. Yep. So right here.
Yeah, same experience on-prem. So you can develop for online and deploy on-prem later. So it saves you having to run up an Exchange VM just for doing development.
Yep. So that's my mail app right there. It's activated. If I jump over to this this email, you'll notice that it's not being activated. It's only being activated for that regex. Really nice experience. It's gone and deployed it into my dev environment, spun up Outlook Web Access, and activated my app. Because it's all JavaScript and it's properly, like it is debugging, it's attached to your app in that browser. You get a really cool debugging experience. You can hit set breakpoints in your JavaScript, walk through things. It's really, really cool. So what we'll do next is we'll start putting some stuff in. So I want to make my app a little bit more interesting. Instead of just mail app, I want to put in the stuff for the timesheet. So I've got let me bump the font size. I've got a label saying fetching timesheets, and then I've just got a table that actually displays all my timesheets. Pretty easy. And then I'll just grab a whole lot of the JavaScript here and walk you through it. In the backend, this is what you'll get by default. It gives you an office.initialize. So after the Office API has all warmed up for you, it'll give you a call to initialize your application. I'm going to hook into jQuery and the object, like document ready. The scenario that I'm trying to show you here is it doesn't apply to just building apps. We have an existing app that we're using. I'm just putting a little bit of JavaScript. We've already got an API behind the scenes, and we can start calling that. We can start value adding on these existing systems that we've already put time and effort into. The interesting bit here is I've got a search function, which is when I start up, I hit search. The rest of it I've got is basically all knockout bootstrapping, which I'm not going to bother going through. Just out of interest, who has used Azure websites? Anyone? Excellent. So my backend is a is an ASP.NET web API that I'm talking to, hosted in the Azure websites. I'll show you that. There wasn't many people, so I might actually show you how that's hosted and do a deployment from Git straight into the Azure websites. Who would be interested in seeing that as well? Awesome. It is really cool. So what I've done is I've just basically chucked in here. Sorry, put it in the wrong spot. This is a jQuery sort of initialization that once your document's all ready, you can say, okay, I want a new view model. That's my JavaScript view model that backs my view. I then just set up an additional knockout binding, and then I apply the binding. So once again, this is all just knockout stuff. This is the really interesting one. So this is my search. So right here, let me bump this font size for you. So inside the search, I'm using jQuery. I'm just saying get JSON. I'm hitting my Redify Timesheets API, Azure websites, grabbing the consultants and myself, and then the timesheets for me. It's a nice RESTful API. Something for the developers in the room that I'm going to call out on, because I'm hosting this in SharePoint, it's in a different domain to my web API, so you have to worry about the cross-domain calling. The callback question mark means that it's going to use return JSON P instead of JSON, and all of the code for this is available on GitHub after the talk. I'll give you the URL so you can download. I've got a JSON P formatter for web API that just, if you put the callback question mark, it'll just work for you. It's really, really nice. All of this stuff is abstracted away, but it's one of the limitations you have to be aware of. So we're just grabbing the JSON. When it's done, I get the data back. I create a row for each of those, each of the timesheets that I get back, bind it up, and there I go. So what I want to do is deploy this again. I forgot my email. Good old LastPass.
Dangers of password complexity.
Yeah, I know. I don't even know my passwords. I just, LastPass generates them all, and it'd be too hard to type anyway. I should have just reset it before the demo to something really simple like Hello World.
Is this easy enough to do? Like, they say you have to wait, you know, for your stuff to upload and change.
Good question. So the question was, is this easy enough to do locally? Yes, it is, but there are limitations. Because you're not running inside Office, you can't get access to the Office object model. In this scenario, I could just hit F5 and get access to my app because I'm not interacting with the object model. But if you are, then obviously there's those limitations. So I'll hit app 1. I forgot to add the reference to knockout, which is awesome.
Good demonstration of debugging there, though.
Yeah, exactly, live debugging. What I'm going to do, rather than hacking around with that, I've got one I prepared earlier. So that's the API side. This is just a couple of extra scripts that I've included, knockout, and you can see the Microsoft Ajax and Office. This allows you to get it up and running. I'm just going to hit F5 on this guy. It's going to this same one.
So we're using Visual Studio here, but it's important to note that you can use whatever you like to do this. I mean, this is just very standard. There's an XML file you need to build out. At the end of the day, we'll show you a little later. But if you wanted to build this in Python or PHP, running on Apache, on EC2, you could do that. And you could frame it in the exact same way. So, you know, we have great tools in Visual Studio and Napa to allow you to do it, but you can use whatever you like to build these sorts of apps.
So all I did then is it failed to load because it was too slow. And so now I'll hit submit on the timesheet. It'll go submitting, blah. That's now calling back into the JSON web service and submitting my timesheet, but not really. That's a quick example of sort of what you can do there. The other really interesting thing is you can access it from here, and this is in the rich client application. Go tech ed demo, fetching timesheets. You can see that the same application is working across all of these different environments. I promised you that I'd show you the back end of that. So what I've got is, over on this side, is I've got my API. This is a just MVC4 web API side. What I'm going to do is show you that in here, I'm just going to go git push. I'll quickly just show you this. So the websites, I've got a couple of examples. So the Redify timesheets are sort of the test ones. I wanted to just show that these are empty and provisioned. Your website's been successfully created, all good. Now what we're going to do is just go into here, go git push Azure master each of these websites. So I'll go into the here. You can set up publishing, so, and I can see my deployments. What happens when you publish? You can publish from TFS, you can publish from quite a few places. Every time I do a commit and a push in Git or in TFS, you can wire it up. So if you're using TFS preview, you can actually auto-deploy on commit. You can see all of my commits there. It builds your project and deploys it into a running Azure website. No friction. It's awesome. So if I hit enter on this guy, it'll go connect to the Git repository in Azure. Once again, don't know my password. Being a little slow.
Need to put in loading music, I think.
Yeah, I need elevator music. Okay, so if you can't read it, from the back, it's saying new deployment received. I'm updating the branch master, preparing deployment for commit blah, building web project, tech ed demo API. It's now just giving me lots of dots while it builds my project. It's downloading a heap of NuGet references. Because I'm using NuGet package restore, I don't check in all of my NuGet packages. So you can see all of these things have just been downloaded and installed on the Azure website. There you go, it's been done web config transforms, preparing files for deployment, deployment successful. Awesome. So if I jump over to the demo API, hit refresh on that, and this goes to answering the question from up the back. We got fetching timesheets, submit. Now, you'll notice that I'm actually not hitting pages slash app one or whatever. This is actually hitting an MVC route that's then serving up my app via MVC. That way you can actually put client-side logic, you can put authentication, you can do all of those sort of things. If you, in the context of Outlook, you can actually make web service calls to the Exchange API behind the scenes to talk to Exchange, create appointments, do all sorts of really cool stuff. There's a great example on identity, so you can do all that, federate and know who's using the application, like whose inbox you're actually in, that sort of stuff. So there's a heap of really cool examples of what we can do here. All of this is up on GitHub, and I'm going to hand, well, I'll jump back to the slides. And then hand over. Oops, wrong one. Cool. Just a little bit of a recap on it. So it gives you the ability to deploy and also sell your apps. So we've got an Office Marketplace. This is really, really nifty. The internal, like be able to do the internal app catalog, like Al said, and flexibility. So I'm going to let him explain sort of a bit more about this.
Thanks, yeah, and it's important to note that this is not a walled garden approach to app stores that you might see in phones and those sorts of things. This is a real, like, we've got an Office store that really aids in discovery for end users. But really, you know, for businesses, we expect IT to manage that distribution of apps and essentially lay out that sandbox. You can get apps from the App Store. You can just load apps, side load apps that you build yourself. You can buy the apps from however you want. If you've got third-party, you know, vendors or partners that are building these apps for you, they can package it up and give it to you, and you can distribute it as well. So I thought I'd just show you the experience on SharePoint and what it looks like to add an app in SharePoint. So essentially, I just drop in here into the settings menu. I can add an app. It's essentially served back all the apps that we promote. And I said yesterday in the SharePoint session, we really treat everything as an app inside of SharePoint now. No longer everything's a list, everything's an app. So I can add a new document library app. I can add a site mailbox app that's connected into Exchange. And I can also add apps from the catalog. And I guess some to note, scroll down. We even got one from a local developer, Nintex. They've got a preview of their workflow platform here. You can also see the Napa codename for the Office 365 development tools. And you can also see how we've packaged up access databases in this app store as well. So you can provide access templates, web access templates as an app as well. So that's essentially how it'll look in SharePoint. But the exact same model, rather than calling office.js, you call SharePoint.js, and you have the exact same access and the same APIs and the same approach to build and publish those apps as well. So this is the new cloud app model for Office and SharePoint. It is early days. You know, we only announced this back in July. We've been working pretty hard on getting the documentation and sample code up and ready for you. You can go to dev.office.com. It's in Excel, it's in Word, it's in Project, it's in Outlook, it's in SharePoint. We expect to be enhancing this. You know, this is a multi-release strategy to get this app model working, but we think there's a ton of value that you can do right now using this app model, using the HTML5, and just taking your existing web assets and very simple work to just add in that JavaScript call to get it to work within an app as well. You know, you have that choice of flexibility. You can build whatever you want on whatever platform you want, whatever backend you want. You know, you just build it, and it's very easy to include it into the Office or SharePoint app store, or you can sideload it into your own app catalog, or you can just use it or provide it to your other users to be able to use and build mashups themselves. You know, it's really targeted around consuming content and creating content in Office. So it's really that set and get scenario that we're really targeting here as well. And with Outlook, it's also using regular expressions to be able to get that data in the right approach as well. You know, it's web, it's cloud, it's all of that, whatever. But really, it's for Office and SharePoint. So this is the target. There isn't that much that's specific here. I could envision that if you build these sorts of apps, it would be almost trivial to get it to work in your own CRM system, your own SAP system, or anything like that. You know, just change a couple of calls, and providing you had that sort of access in API in your other system, you get it to work there as well. So office.com/store, you can try out some apps. Dev.office.com, you can sign up for the Office 365 developer tenant, and then you can add in the Napa Office 365 developer experience there as well. And we also have a blog, blogs.msdn.com/b/office-apps. So thank you very much for your time this morning. I appreciate 8:15 on a Thursday morning is a pretty tough session, but thanks particularly for the guys standing at the back for this session. But we'll hang around and answer questions if you have any on this new app model. We have another session to go further into the application hosting model in SharePoint on Friday at 11:30 a.m. So definitely attend that if you'd like to go deeper into the SharePoint side of the app story as well. Thank you very much. So open to questions if anyone has any questions. Oh, lots of questions. Yeah, up the front first. Good question. Is there an app model for Link Online and Exchange Online? For Link, there is not this app model. There is an extensibility point with Link still, but it's not in the same app model. For Exchange, it's really around the Outlook app model and the Outlook web app model as a way to extend Exchange as well. Yeah. Questions up the. Yep. Question here.
What provision is there for when the user, say, in Outlook or Excel, is
Yeah, absolutely. So the question was, what provisions do you have for when the user is offline? What do you have to do there? We have some guidance on how to handle that. Essentially, you know, one of the reasons why we can do this with HTML5 now is that we have the HTML5 is smart enough to be able to take these apps offline if you allow them to. But if you're opening a... But you've got to explicitly code for that sort of thing, yeah. A question? Does it replace web parts in SharePoint? No, it doesn't replace web parts in SharePoint. It does coexist. You can still build those legacy web part approaches. But we think this is a much nicer model and a much faster model for a certain type of web part. Yes, absolutely. You can include it in the zones and all that sort of thing as well. Yeah, question? Yep. That's right. The question was, when you build apps for Outlook, do you have to build in the intelligence to parse the message? You do. So basically, either a regular expression or your pattern matching, or you just say run it on every app. You know, traditionally, there'll be something in that email that is triggering that sort of event. Maybe it's as simple as, you know, a order number or something like that that you're looking for, a particular format to trigger it. But you do need something to trigger it, or you just trigger it every time.
A bit further to that, though, the API does give you sanitized versions of things, so you don't have to strip out HTML. You can get out the plain text version, that sort of thing, to make your life a bit simpler.
Yeah.
Is there a limit to the information you can access or modify in the mail? Like, can you look underlying headers? Can you edit text? Like, are there limitations to the app model?
Yeah. Good question. So the question was, are there limitations to the app model? Yes, there are limitations to the app model. In Outlook, specifically, it's really about getting information from the email, not creating content in the email itself.
So
yeah, so it's a get only. Yeah.
Would you say you'd have to use like a plugin?
If you wanted to like auto-generate emails and those sorts of things, then you're looking at kind of the traditional extensibility model.
But you can create appointments and trigger sending of email and that sort of stuff, and you can get a lot of write scenarios via the Exchange API, but only if you've got access to the Exchange API. So,
did you say you wanted to modify like the subject based upon criteria?
Yeah, no. So, yeah, good scenario. I mean, I can imagine a scenario where you want to flag things as confidential or top secret, those sorts of things in the email. We'll traditionally do them in transport rules in Exchange to do that. But there's nothing in, say, the editing mode of Outlook for you to be able to set content based on the Outlook app.
And is that just due to the nature of your app model? Like, will that change?
Yeah, we'll continue to extend this and investigate new scenarios, but right now, yeah, it's just a get. Yep. Yes?
How do you get your app into the Microsoft Marketplace?
Good question. So there's an App Hub site, or dev.office.com. We have a program for gathering apps and getting them into the App Store. We essentially do some testing, and then you submit your app. We're also working on essentially a licensing API if you want to charge for your app or something like that. You can choose to implement that or you can do it however you want, but dev.office.com has got some guidance for that. Come up later. We're looking for new apps, so I'm happy to collect details and have someone from our team contact you as well. Yeah. Yes, question?
Yeah, good question. If you have those sort of scenarios, then... the question was, if you're doing JSONP, how do you do... That's fine for GET, how do you do a POST? If you're doing that sort of stuff, then I'd recommend you don't do the cross-domain thing. Host your application in Azure, and then it's calling its own APIs. So because the HTML's hosted on your web host, there's no problems calling back to itself. So it really depends on your scenario. If you want to just do the client-side HTML and JavaScript with like back-end data feed and fetching data specifically, that's all good. But then you have to move to sort of the MVC model that I showed where it's all hosted in a website. You update your manifest to point to that, and then you're all good. There is no cross-domain issues.
Because of this, and haven't had any timing when it's going to be released, I suppose.
Right. So the question was, you know, we're about to embark on a big SharePoint project. You know, should we do it now or should we wait for 2013? It depends on the timeline of your project. You know, we'll release this in 2013 for SharePoint Office. The whole stack is coming out at that time. I would suggest that depending on the timeline, if you've got a project that is going to take 12 months to do, and you can structure it so you can build back-end capabilities, and knowing this is coming, you can look at the preview now and see the new model and delay that decision to either go 2010 or 2013 for now and build out that back-end model. You may choose, you know, there are plenty of drivers why you'd still go 2010. You know, again, our support lifecycle is 5 years plus 5 years extended support, so SharePoint 2010 will be well supported for a long time to come. But there are a bunch of new cool capabilities in 2013. If you were about to embark on a big development project of building a lot of custom web parts and SharePoint extensions that you want to use in perpetuity, I would definitely take a look at this first to see what you can use and whether you want to use this model instead.
You've also got, in 2013, an awesome RESTful API that's over the top of SharePoint. Like, it's actually properly RESTful, full of hypermedia. It's actually a massive step forward. So doing new apps, you don't have to deal with the client object modelers, and you can use the new API instead, which is pretty compelling in my opinion.
Another question? Yeah.
Excuse me by claiming latency at the beginning, but is there a compliant version of 2013, and how does this kind of that model fit in with the client programming?
Yeah, absolutely. So this app model will work on the Office clients as well as the Office web apps, as well as SharePoint. So it is using HTML5, JavaScript to build the app, but it's rendered in the rich clients as well. So. Right. Yeah, it's fully available. And, you know, it's platform agnostic, so it'll run in the web apps, it'll run on the clients, you know, it'll run on whatever browser you want to use, whatever device you want to use in the web apps.
I think that's the biggest thing, is that you do have the rich client extensibility model. This opens that up and allows you to also target like Outlook Web Access and Outlook, or just web apps in general, as well as like mobile web apps and those sort of things. So. It's just about opening it up.
So would we have a choice of using this model or like a traditional click once?
Yeah, you will. Yeah, click once, still supported. VSTO is still supported. VBA is still supported.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Up the back.
I'm just wondering, are there any code review or content review for applications that you are getting for a business? So just to make sure that when they are running, say, SharePoint.
Yeah. There are some. There are some terms and conditions of what we'll put in the App Store and those sorts of things. Again, it's not a walled garden, so you can build the app and put it in wherever else you want. But there are some terms and conditions. If you have a look at the blog, I'll just click back. If you go to the blog, blogs.msdn.com/b/office-apps, we have some in-depth information about what the Office Store will do, when it will go live, when we're accepting nominations, and what the criteria are. There are kind of sanity things, like don't try and fake other systems and those sorts of things. Like, you could potentially have these sorts of apps. You don't want to misrepresent someone and those sorts of things. So, yeah.
And then right up the back.
Good question. Does NAPA support debugging?
Not that I've seen so far. It would be really nice to see that sort of stuff, but
it's a great feature request, isn't it? Yeah. No, not right now. So.
Who knows? Though, it's still all in preview, yeah. But yeah.
Can you communicate between, say, your app model and say if you've got a traditional? I mean, I'm no app developer, but like a plugin, can they talk to each other?
Via the document, so a little bit of a kind of hack. You'll set and get some hidden field or something like that. Yeah,
okay, right.
Yeah. Like, so they're all sandbox, so they're only communicating with the Office app.
Yep.
As well.
You mentioned that through App Catalog, we cannot actually limit the type of application apps that user can use.
Mm-hmm.
But how can actually still user
So the question is, if you're managing the apps through the app catalog.
Yeah, you don't want the user to use B app, yeah. For example. Mm-hmm. But still, they can probably copy paste jQuery from somewhere and put it inside the content editor.
So you want to block a certain app, but yeah. The users will then build their own app and redeploy it. And how do you prevent that?
That's don't give them permission to.
So there is the notion of a essentially a kill bit in this app model. So if you want to block, like blacklist certain apps from running, you can do that. You can push that out as well. You can restrict the ability for users to deploy their own apps through the Office, through SharePoint, and through Exchange if you want to do that as well. And then you can just give them the IT managed experience. You can turn off the Office store to do those sorts of things as well. But how do you stop a rogue developer developing their own app you don't like? Yeah, that's one approach. It's kind of a tricky problem. I'm not sure if you've got any ideas.
You just wouldn't allow them to deploy anything, so they wouldn't be able to actually put their custom app into their app catalog. I don't think. If you're giving...
So the funny thing about these apps is there's no real concept of installation or deployment, because really what you're doing is you're just announcing that, hey, you have access to this manifest file that has the icon, you know, the description of the app, and that'll appear in the interface. But what you can do is you can deploy out via the App Store and say, if you're connected to this SharePoint site, these are the apps that you have available to you as a user. And you can also do it via a file share as well. So if you have a network share with a list of manifests, you can actually direct those users to that. But each app is living on its own backend system. So.
The example you showed with the Excel and having apps in the Excel, I'm assuming that's part of the file. So if somebody else in the office opens it and they don't have that component or that app installed on their machine, what's the user experience there?
Sure. So in the scenario where they have there's a document with the app, like the context app embedded in it, a map or something like that, and the user doesn't have it, really it's just a link to a website. So they will see that map. They can interact with it. In the case of users, say, offline or outside of the organization, what it'll actually do as well, it'll just capture a still image of the app and say, you know, it's not live, but this is what should have gone here. And that's the same case when you go backwards compatible to 2010 or 2007 as well. They will see that static image and a notification that this, you know, this feature is not available in 2013. So. Yes?
That kind of reminded me of a question I had before. You mentioned that they publish to Excel services as apps. So how do the apps work in Excel services?
Sure. Yeah. So they publish to Excel Web App, which is different to Excel services. So it is just the Excel web app rendering. Not the Excel. So you don't have the programmatic Excel API to play with. All right,
questions?
Well, thanks very much for sticking around. We'll hang around at the front if you have any other questions. So, cheers.
Also, probably be around the Redify coffee cart if you want to catch me. So.
Free coffee?
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks, Jake.
No worries. Thank you.